Hi, I'm Melanie O'Reilly, and welcome to Jazz on the Bay. This program takes us out on the streets of San Francisco and the Bay Area to sample live jazz on the sidewalk. Right now you're listening to local saxophonist Jim Grantham, and I'll be talking to him a little later in the program. But I also met up with two other saxophone players on my trip, Vince Wallace and Lisa Pollard. So sit back and relax and enjoy your day on the Bay. We're here in downtown Oakland in the Bulldog Coffee Shop listening to wonderful jazz played by saxophone player Vince Wallace. And Vince, you've played with some of the great musicians.
It's true. Yeah, I played with Miles Davis's rhythm section, and I played with Sonny Stitt.
I believe you've actually played with Charlie Parker.
Yeah, when I was about 14 years old over at Bop City. It was an after-hours place where all the musicians used to hang from Sunday through Friday or Saturday. It was open from 2 a.m. till 6 a.m. in the morning. And if Count Basie was in town or Duke Ellington, a lot of the sidemen will come down and jam with everybody. And so it was like a university of jazz. It was a place where I got to rub elbows with all the greats. You never know who would come in the door from one night to the other. Billie Holiday or Duke Ellington or Louis Armstrong or Miles Davis. And so there's no better way of learning jazz than actually playing with somebody. You know, it's like a one-to-one kind of a thing. One of my greatest inspirations was getting to meet Louis Armstrong. He was at the Oakland Auditorium years ago with Velma Middleton and Barney Brigard, Skip Moore, and Cozy Cole on drums. And he gave me enough inspiration for the rest of my life to always want to be a jazz musician, because he gave so much. Like in one evening, he played set after set, about an hour long, and with all kinds of tunes, you know, the whole encyclopedia of American music. And so it was a good thing to be able to meet all these people who came through Oakland. Like Miles Davis used to live here, and Billie Holiday used to play up at the 53 Club. And her father, Hines, was living in Oakland for a long time. I used to run to him at Capwell's department store, returning a Christmas presents and stuff the following day. And Jack Teagarden, Kid Ory, used to play here.
These days, do you think it's more difficult for young people to get the experience that you did?
Yeah, there's not as many venues as there were then. In the old days, they used to have after-hour sessions every night, and then they'd have another session that would start at 6 and go on to about noon. I used to play at the Plantation Club. I played with Paul Chambers and Jimmy Lovelace. And we used to play for, they give us grits and scrambled eggs for breakfast.
And where did it start for you? Where did you start playing, and what moved you to play the saxophone?
Well, I used to dream about being a saxophone player, but I had a clarinet at first. I had a metal clarinet, and I practiced on that and played along with the radio and stuff and picked up tunes and stuff. And then I started organizing jam sessions. And then when I got to high school, I got a paper route and delivered papers and got enough money to buy my first saxophone, which was a Martin, Indiana student model. And then when I was 14, I penciled in a mustache and got me a blue suit and a red tie and joined the union. And I started playing behind strippers down at the IT Club and different clubs, you know, walking the bar and stuff like that, and playing Night Train and all those kind of tunes, you know. And then I started dropping out of school. I was really good in school as far as music and art, but then the nightlife got the best of me, and pretty soon I started falling asleep in all the classes that I didn't like math and stuff like that. You know? And I decided to join the Air Force. So I wanted to be in the band, but they said my ears were too good, so they were going to put me in radar and radio and stuff like that.
And that brought you to the next step of forming your own band? Or?
Yeah, I had some small groups around the Bay Area and stuff, and then I went on the road. I went down to Long Beach, California, and I played some country and western music at a place called Hollywood on the Pike. And then from Hollywood on the Pike, I graduated to the Stardust Club, which was kind of a mafia club down on 2nd Street in Long Beach. And I played there, and then I went to the Whip. And then from there, I went to the Hat, or the El Sombrero, which is across the street from the Cascades Club, where I worked with Dexter Gordon. And then we had a gig down there where we used to have different guests come down and sit in with us every weekend. We'd have Jack Sheldon, or Joe Maney, Bob Whitlock, and Shorty Rogers, and Bud Shank, and people like that, Bob Cooper, Frank Rossellino.
You seem to inspire a lot of people, Vince. I noticed that you've got a lot of young people at the gig, and you've got a young band playing with you, such as Sean Kenner on bass and Jason Slotu on drums.
Slota.
This is live. It's lots of people coming up and down on the sidewalk, and most people would get very distracted, but you seem to thrive on it. Mm-hmm. And this is the wonderful thing I've been struck by, is the live experience of music on the sidewalk, such as yourself, Vince. And I know this is something you feel very strongly.
I feel it's going to bring us world peace, you know. All the people from the world contribute something towards this jazz, you know. I try to collect it from all different sources, you know, and play it back to the people, you know. You know. I think it's a kind of a, it has a unity factor in it, you know, brings people together in a peaceful way, you know, to make a joyful noise, you know.
Listening to Vince Wallace, I was introduced to sax lady Lisa Pollard, who had just dropped in to listen to her mentor.
Vince was quite a notebook of understanding and brilliance about the saxophone, and I was a novice kid coming out of high school when I heard Vince playing on a sidewalk, and I was playing tenor. I'd been playing tenor for a few years, but I was only sight-reading charts, and I really did desire to improvise, but when I heard Vince play, he was, as he is today, just playing with one other musician. He's playing with two today, but he was just playing with an upright bass player named Ron Crotty, and you could hear all the chord changes when this guy played. And you could hear, had I known at the time, I would have known the Sonny Stitt connection and the Sonny Rollins and all of the guys that he comes forward with as a player, not to mention his own creativity. But I really respected what I heard immediately, and even though I was a real young kid and he was so fashioned as a player and so hot, I desired to play with him and learn from him, and I immediately asked him to start working with me, which he did, and he taught me to play by ear. I owe so much of my professional opportunities to what Vince taught me. How he worked with me, because there weren't the books and the kinds of things that help you learn as a young player available. They're all there now. You can buy a rhythm section record and learn, you know, standard tunes. But Vince had one idea, which I think was the most sensational thing, which was he would only make me put all the music away and listen to what he played and then figure it out. He made me insisted that I learn whatever he was teaching me by ear, entirely by ear. And it sharpened up my ear and opened every door for me.
And it opened up a door to Duke Ellington, I believe?
Well, I went to a seminar that Ellington was giving at the University of California. It was a three-day symposium of all of his music. And actually, Cannonball Adderley was playing at my college near where I had met Vince for free. And I didn't want to leave that, since we were having some master classes with Cannonball, who I also adored. But my mother insisted that I go to this three-day symposium of Ellington music. And I went, yeah, Duke Ellington sat in Dahl A-Train, so what, who cares? But it wasn't true. And what I discovered in these 3 days of this amazing informational opportunity, which was rather expensive for us, and yeah, I think it cost a bunch of money to spend the 3 days. I was one of the youngest people, but it also entitled you to a front row seat with Duke Ellington's orchestra playing at the end of this. And by then I was pretty goo-goo and gaga, because I heard the vastness of his compositions and his ability as a brilliant writer, composer, arranger, and how he played the band. And yeah, I was captured by this. I would have to say had a kind of born again experience at that moment in time, and so I found myself sitting in the front row with actually a friend of Vince's was at the concert, a guy named Bert Wilson, who was a quadriplegic guy but who still managed to play the saxophone even though he was in a wheelchair. And I'd met, you know, all these crazy people through Vince. So I remember that I walked up to him and said, "What's the name of the baritone player?" And he said, "It's Harry Carney. He's been with Duke his whole life." And I wrote him a note and shoved it up on the stage. And as I was exiting, he called me back over and said, "Well, I've never seen a note like this in all the years I've been playing music, and you have to come meet the guys." And then that sort of led me towards the Ellington situation. I went and worked with him. He kept calling me from different places and encouraging me to work on various things. And then one day he just called and said, come. So I got on the next plane and went out and worked with the band for a few months. But again, there wasn't much I could do because the band was more or less together. It would just be if somebody was drunk or didn't make the scene, I'd come up and play a tune or something like this. But I wasn't really working with him. However, after he died, his son brought me on the road as a regular member of the band when he took it over Mercer. So I worked with Mercer's band for a few years. And then we parted company, and I came back home and learned my craft better and started playing around the area and working in Europe. But the experience of that was really remarkable. And I started to collect Ellington records. So I, many years ago, had achieved 250 Duke Ellington albums, not to mention CDs and whatnot. And I could tell you everybody who's on what and who's playing what, when, where. Kind of became a fanatic.
This is Melanie O'Reilly and Jazz on the Bay, and we're out savoring the sounds of live jazz on the streets of San Francisco. As I was talking to Lisa Pollard, she invited me to come along and hear her own group, the Green Street Marching Band. Comprising mainly of professional jazz musicians, the marching band continues a tradition dating back to the late 19th century. For the past 20 years, the Green Street Marching Band has been the music of choice for Chinese American funerals in San Francisco. They've been marching so regularly that they've become a tourist attraction, and last year the band led about 350 funeral processions. Lisa Pollard took over the band 8 years ago, and her rule is to have fun and enjoy the gig, but remember dignity and respect, and play good.
Okay, you can get in front of us, and you can walk actually in the street with us.
Great.
Because no one really cares about this, and they've cleared the streets, more or less. We're supposed to have motorcycle escorts. You'll find a lot of noise going on, so you won't get all good. Yes,
sir.
Oh,
that's cool.
We're going up Stockton all the way up to Clay. When we go down Clay, then you'll want to sort of get in front of us and make a left turn onto Grant.
Right.
When we start down Grant Street, we're going to turn down the tempo and we're going to do this turn of the century march, this very old piece that everyone digs.
Thank you.
we just go to Jackson, which is about 4 blocks, and then we'll make a right turn on Jackson, and I'll put the band wherever I can find a nice spot at the end. We'll place a couple of last tunes as they pass by. We'll do the 3 bows again, and then they'll be off on their way. Then we roll back to here. You're totally welcome to come along, hang out, you know.
Continuing with another time-honored tradition, Lisa and I and the Green Street Marching Band retire to a local pub for refreshments. An Irish pub, of course. O'Reilly's across the road on Green Street.
John Coppola, have I said it right?
Well, that's one of the ways, but it's spelled with a no, so Coppola is closer.
Coppola?
Yeah.
You've been with this band with the Green Street Marching Band, with Lisa Pollard for a long time.
Well, I'd say as long as she's had it, I think it's 12 or 13 years now. Yeah.
And your background, you've played with Woody Herman, Stan Kenton Orchestra. Tell me more.
Well, I worked during the big band era when it was going on. That's what I worked. That's what I did. I traveled with bands, and that's what I wanted to do. You know, at that time, yeah, I wanted to be a jazz trumpet player, but couldn't always do that. So I traveled with big bands, a bunch of them.
So you're one of the, let's say, more experienced in the band. Been doing the rounds, and in a way that we can't do anymore, like the younger musicians. What do you think?
Well, I think that all of these guys would have had no problem playing in all the good bands. You know, that they just don't exist. You see, the ballrooms are gone, so that's over. I mean, as far as that experience is concerned, it was very important because I got to work with some great players, and I think the better the musicians that you work with, you improve. You know, so it was my fortunate at that particular time. But, of course, their experiences now are different than what I'm doing. You know, they're having a different kind of musical experience, which is contemporary, what's going on with them now, you see?
And shall we turn to Mike here?
My name is Mike Olmos, trumpet player, just like John.
How did you meet this band?
This band, just through freelancing, you know. You meet a trumpet player needs to cover his butt for a gig and calls you, you know, so... I think it was about 3 years ago I met you, John.
Yeah.
I won't repeat the speech you gave me, the advice. You told me not to take it seriously, and I didn't, so. But it was still deep.
It's still deep, isn't it? Mike is a very gifted trumpet player, man, a very gifted jazz musician, and hopefully that he'll get out of here and go to New York, and so some of the other guys can get all his work. No, he should be, I think, he could be heard from, if I think, I told him that one time. This San Francisco to Bay Area is very limited as far as musicians developing in any way. There just isn't that much work, and there's just, it just doesn't happen. New York is the capital of jazz in this country.
So it's still the capital of jazz in this mm-hmm. country. And Mike, where are you from?
I'm from Central Valley, Merced, California.
Let's move to Vince Latiano. And Vince, how did you meet Lisa, John, and the band? You've known Lisa a long time.
I have. John, my grandfather had a couple of his records. And when I was a kid, and that's how I started listening to, and that's my introduction to John. Then I finally moved here and met him. And then Lisa I met a little bit later. And I live in the neighborhood, so I'm kind of the perennial sub in the band, you know. And it's when they really get stuck, they just live six blocks down the street, and they say, well, who can we get? Oh, everybody's busy. Well, call Vince. and so that's how I came to be here, and I'm glad to be here. Look around you. This is a beautiful day. We're in an Irish pub. We just played some wonderful music, and I'm hanging out with my friends, you know. Actually, I don't have too many friends, but I'm hanging out with some fellow musicians. Actually, these guys aren't really, well, they're brass players.
You do have people that can tolerate you.
That's right.
By the way, is your grandfather out of the slammer yet?
He's on parole. Yeah.
Was something about animals, or was it children?
Well, it had to do with a horse race.
You realize this is being recorded.
This is Irish radio, too.
Yeah, right.
They'll understand.
They'll get it, yeah.
Just tell us who else that you play with. You have your own band as well.
Well, like all of us, we freelance. We make a living doing whatever it takes, you know, to play, teach, whatever. And, no one will seem to hire me, so I have to create my own work. So I have gigs here and there. I have a Sunday afternoon jam session, and I have a couple of trio nights at little clubs here and there. And then, you know, just a lot of a mixed bag of stuff. And I've played with Woody Herman, same band that John had played with for many years. I played with Cal Jader and Vince Guaraldi. And John and I played a musical for a year and a half called Hair. a rock musical.
How come you still got hair and he hasn't?
He does. Put your hat on, John. He's got a lot of hair.
We'll move to our other trombone player here.
Hi, my name's Danny Gruen. It's nice to meet you. I was lucky enough to be born and raised here in San Francisco. Came up through the public school system, had some great teachers. John Coppola actually was one of my teachers when I was a student at School of the Arts here, and had some great people to learn from. Spent a lot of time around the jazz scene here. Just kind of came up through the the local San Francisco scene, and it's just a joy to be out here marching through the streets on a sunny afternoon in North Beach.
Tell us what other gigs you do when you're not with this band.
Well, last night I was over at Bruno's on 20th and Mission playing with the Marcus Shelby Jazz Orchestra with Darren here and Mike Olmos, and it was a swinging night. It was really good. Played some great stuff. But I do that gig. I'm really dedicated to that gig, but I do like to two or three times a month usually. And what keeps me going really is the Chinese funerals, and along with salsa gigs, which I'm sure we've all done a few salsa gigs in our day. But I do like two or three a week, and they pay pretty decent.
And let's move to Darren here, who's from Toronto.
Truth.
And how does it compare with Toronto?
The jazz scene here, I think, is a lot more swinging. When I go back home and I hear people playing, it sounds more like conservatory jazz or something, you know? I don't know, it feels different. I like it here.
Angel, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Angel Orozco. I'm from Mexico, and I grew up in L.A., down there with a gang with Poncho Sanchez and them. We're all from the same area, because I'll bring his name up, and that's... We all got into the drums together. Being a drummer, salsa, jazz, really, I like playing the big band stuff, you guys. Just, you know, that was where my heart. My dad, too, by the way, got me introduced to Stan Kenton, along with my grandfather. And I think I'm one, along with Vince, one of the few salsa drummers, because a typical salsa band don't got drums, really. It's congas, timbales, bell, the percussion. But to have the drums in there, kind of like a Irekere was one of the bands from Cuba. That sort of, I like to follow, to put in the drumming of jazz bands into salsa, which is, I love doing that. And Lance Gerner is a great trumpet player that I met along the line that used to work here. He's the one that introduced me to Lisa. She's been great. What a great director. It's fun doing this, not only playing the hymns, the John Philip Sousa, all types of stuff that you bring along, John. You're amazing. He keeps on giving me so much, you know,
John writes
insight.
Our arrangements.
He does the
arrangements. He has tailored this band into something unique and different that nobody in this earth, even if they tried to duplicate this band, could get John Coppola to write the most pretty, beautiful ways of playing these songs that could ever be played. So John is not only integral, he is the main body. The musicians want to be in the band to stand next to John, to play in his aura, to enjoy his silliness and crazy baby behavior that nobody is as young or as old as John Coppola in this band.
John, what's the last word with you? Just tell us the story. How is it that your namesake, the director Francis Ford Coppola,
We're not related, but I do work for him on occasion, say the least. We've done some things with Lisa and Vince. And so Francis gave me this music to put together for a small brass ensemble. And it was, I wrote the stuff out for him. Came out okay, he liked it, so we got more work out of it. And then we do a thing for him almost, I guess we've done it every year, the second year. He's really a very generous man, a very kind man. Francis is an interesting person. He sponsors a homeless shelter here up in North Beach, and every year we play for a fundraiser for him. And the local people, the politicians, a great many Hollywood people come up out of respect. And this last time, we had the whole Green Street Band play, and we went in there and we played a piece that I put together called Sicily. And we played that for him, which... he enjoyed.
Well, we've thoroughly enjoyed your music this morning. The Green Street Marching Band, thank you so much for your wonderful time and music.
Bye. Bye, sweetie. Thanks for coming.
I'm just going to jump in here on the original broadcast to highlight the wonderful role Lisa Pollard has played in the Green Street Marching Band's history. She has spent 30 years as its bandleader, and under her leadership, it has been the band of choice for some extraordinary celebrations in San Francisco. As a result of being noticed on the street, the band has appeared in movies for the big screen and television, such as the popular TV series Nash Bridges. They also gained local recognition, performing at the groundbreaking opening of the San Francisco Jazz Center. It is only recently, in May of this year, that Lisa decided she would retire from being bandleader, and she literally passed the baton on to trumpeter-arranger Aaron Criscorn, ensuring the band carries on being an integral part of the city's history. Lisa continues to perform in various ensembles and is also much sought after as a music educator in the Bay Area. As a tribute to her, we will finish this section with the track Stalking from her album I See Your Face Before Me, which also features Red Holloway, John Coppola, Benny Green, and Ray Brown.
Thank you.
And as I wound my way home, I finished my day of listening to jazz on the sidewalk at the Coffee Mill in Oakland in the company of Jim Grantham and his quartet.